Good morning and welcome to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. You'll be with me for the next 2 hours in what we like to refer to as the engagement hours, trying to get you involved and engaged in your community and making our community, our state, and our nation a better place to live. Behind the glass today, I have Brendan Kraft with me, and it's his responsibility to keep me on time and on target. And so we will continue to roll. Lot to talk about today. There's a lot going on. I think some of you may be saved by having to listen about my NCAA basketball rant and how I lost my bracket last night with a group of 14 guys that I've been participating in fantasy football with since the early 80s. It's the only thing I care about winning is the fantasy football league. But anytime you can beat them, and last night the same guy that beat me in the championship this year won with Florida when I needed a Houston to come through. So kind of an odd outcome of that game, an odd result in the tournament, because Florida really didn't look that good most of the game and Houston won it all. So Brandon, I don't even know, are you a sports fan at all? You watching that game last night?
Unfortunately not. I'm not a big sports guy.
That's okay.
I know Neely is. I mean, he talks about sports a lot to me, and it mostly goes over my head, but it's always fun.
Well, it's always one of those ones. This one, there's so many people that are involved in trying to predict the outcomes of the brackets to see if they can get the perfect bracket. That's always been something people have been searching for. But once again, this year, there is no perfect bracket in the NCAA tournament. So I'm sure people are going to be upset about that. One day somebody may do it. But the problem is the odds of actually picking a perfect bracket are over 9 quadrillion. It's a number that's just off the scale.
It's a little high.
It's just not going to happen. I mean, 63 games with the odds, you throw all that in there. So appreciate everybody joining us today. Our schedule is going to change from what I was ready for last night, pre-briefed and ready to go. But we're going to stand by. I think we're going to get Congressman Juan Scamani on us to open the day. Lots going on in D.C. I'm sure the congressman would love to join us. And I think he may have just called in. Brandon, do we have the congressman with us?
Yep, you're on, Juan.
Excellent. Good morning.
Good morning, Congressman. Thank you for joining us. I greatly appreciate it, as always. It's always good to talk to you, and I know things are going crazy, and when they called up and said, hey, can you get them on right away versus later in the day, we said, of course, always we'll help you out on that part. So everybody's, just as a reminder, as if anybody on this show doesn't know, Juan Scamani is the sophomore congressman that represents Arizona CD6, and if you missed it, he was just named last week as the most effective legislator in Arizona, and that put you 15th overall out of all 435 spots there. Congressman, can you just kind of talk to us a little bit about what that means?
Yeah, sure, Ted. Well, first of all, thanks for having me on, and thank you for accommodating the change of time. It's just a lot of moving parts over here. We were just over in conference meeting with the speaker about all that's coming up, and we're meeting with the president later tonight. So I was in meetings late at night, last night as well, again with the speaker, as we move all this process forward that we can get into in a second. But right now, about your question, yeah, thank you for highlighting that. You know, again, all these rankings are coming out that I didn't even know that they were around, but this one is by a bipartisan or nonpartisan group that just measures the effectiveness of the members of Congress. Basically, how much were you able to do, right? Pass legislation, work with people on both sides, or get your agenda through. And when they came up with the ranking based on their formula, yes, I ended up being ranked 15th overall, third in my class, because this is a full cycle measurement. So for the whole 118th Congress, so out of the freshmen, number three, and out of Arizona, I was ranked the top legislator in terms of being effective. And the way I talk about this is I was sent up here to do the work, do the job, get legislation through, which doesn't always move at the speed that we want it to. Actually, almost it never does. It's meant to be slower than most would like it to be, because it needs to be thought out and thoughtful in that. But it does need some expedited process here, and I went right to work, especially for veterans, and as you noted on the border, the things that we've been talking about. So that's, you know, all that came about, and I'm just happy that I'm doing what I was elected to do, and you know, but a lot bigger challenges are coming up this Congress now. So it's new every Congress for sure, but even every day up here.
Well, I know that there are a lot of us that appreciate that work. When Congress stands at a standstill, and if you look at a lot of the other members of Congress, there's not a lot of bills that are going forward, and you've been fairly successful at getting them. I want to thank you for your support of the military, because a lot of you received exceptionally high marks for your support of military and military issues. So I appreciate you doing that. But it sounds to me like there's a lot on your plate. And I've got a couple issues I was going to talk to, but perhaps you can just share with us a little bit about your meetings last night. You knew with the speaker, you said this, you're going to meet with him later today, the president perhaps later this evening as well. What is currently the focus of the Congress, and what is going on back in D.C.?
Yeah, a couple of main things. I think the president is taking bold and very fast action in a lot of areas. And at the same time, Congress is acting simultaneously on some of these same issues and also on our own job. I get a lot of questions from people at home when I go back every weekend on what the White House is doing and the administration. And we try to address those directly and there's with the knowledge that I have, not forgetting that we've got our own job here in the House of passing certain things. And when you look at, again, the reason that I was ranked the most effective member is because I stay true to that. I stay true to the job description of what I need to be doing here. There are members up here, Ted. I mean, that I don't want to name people because this happens on both sides. They've been up here for decades and they passed zero bills in that time, literally zero bills that they've actually passed. We've passed, I'm looking here at the wall because we keep record of them, at least eight or nine that we've passed. So it's been, and some signed by the president as well. So I want to put that in perspective, because when we get up here and focus on what the job of the legislature is, of the legislative branch, that helps to be effective. Back to the first question. So the around the budget and reconciliation. The appropriator, we're going to get into the FY26 numbers in the summer, but we first need to get through reconciliation. We just passed a CR that, again, I wasn't thrilled with, but that's what was necessary. That was the compromise that everybody came to keep the government open and also be able to have this conversation on reconciliation. So this week, the Senate sent over their version of the resolution that very much mimics what the House had in terms of some of the spending cuts that we need to do. Not nearly as high in some ways, but my meetings with the Speaker have been, this is important for the audience to know, to continue to know what's important for us in my district. And I've been very, very vocal on our position regarding cuts. And I'm not alone on this. There were at least eight or nine other members around the table with the speaker last night in districts like mine that have a high Medicaid population, or states that have expanded Medicaid as well, like Arizona, and talking about the detrimental effects that this would have if anything like that goes through. I have a lot of rural hospitals in my district that I'm listening to and what that would do. We obviously have a lot of friends and neighbors that are actually on Medicaid, and I know people that are on it. So this is something that impacts our community very directly. Quite frankly, the left has been going rogue on this, lying about it, and attacking when nothing has actually happened. I'm actually fighting for this to not go through. That's been my mission, and that's why. And the speaker is listening to members like me. So that's really the nature of my meetings with them. Also, actually protecting, it goes beyond Medicaid. It's protecting Pell Grants. It's protecting Head Start programs that I've been very supportive of. All the things that actually work. I continue to remind my colleagues and leadership here that we need to find the areas that we need to cut the waste, the fraud, the abuse, all that. But there are also areas that are working, and these areas need to be not only protected but actually invested in. Pell Grants and Head Start being two of them, and of course protecting Medicaid. Now there is, again, waste, fraud, and abuse in those areas also. No, I don't think anybody can deny that. So we need to make sure that the right people are on these programs, the ones that the programs were meant and created to protect and serve. And as we do that, we're going through this process that it's going to still be another probably 5 to 6 weeks of this reconciliation process. But it's important to keep reminding leadership where I am on this.
And Congressman, I think you brought up a couple important points. One, first off, is people don't understand that in reconciliation, you can't touch Social Security or Medicare. So Medicare and Social Security are protected. But I think what's scaring the public is that $880 million. And you said some of the numbers came back a little different from the Senate, but the $880 million cut to DHS. There are those who say that the only way that can happen is by cutting Medicaid. And you've said you're gonna back Medicaid. What do you see as possible ways to either reduce that $880 million, or are there other areas inside of DHS that you believe that $880 million worth of cuts can happen?
Well, just a point of clarification, it's $880 billion with a B. And it's for the House, it's Energy and Commerce. And it's over a 10-year period. So just to give people the idea of where this is, so you're looking at about $80 billion a year for this. And there are different areas. We have energy reform. When you have not only through the jurisdiction of Energy and Commerce, which is where this is, but you have other revenue sources that are also being enhanced, because the reconciliation process is all about looking at areas where you're going to reduce the spending and areas where you can produce more revenue. So also, as we're looking at extending some of the tax credits for small businesses and families, these are the things that obviously impact the revenue of the federal government, and also the reduction that we need to do. And we're getting preliminary numbers here out of the Congressional Budget Office, which is just they don't report to any party or anyone. They do their own analysis. The projections of how much we can, how much the price tag means, for example, by adding work requirements, that's in the billions that we can go ahead and meet that way. So as you look at also the improper payments or some of the abuse going on in these programs, you can save a lot of money that way. And that's what the process is right now after we pass the final resolution this week. So we can actually dive into the numbers and see where that's going to come from. And I'm telling you again, I am committed to making sure that nobody that is on these programs that depend on them, that the programs are meant to be, the eligible recipients of them, get impacted by it. Who am I talking about? I'm talking about families that are in poverty. We're talking about people that live with disabilities that these programs are meant to protect, single moms. These are the groups that the program of the Medicaid was meant to protect, and we need to make sure that continues to serve for them.
Well, thank you for that, Congressman. It's going to, as you know, ultimately Medicaid and runs through the states, and it's the states end up having to be the ones that execute the program. So there's definitely a lot of concerns, and we'll be keeping a close eye on that one. Another thing I wanted to just ask you about real quick, and I'm planning on holding you as long as I can, and then we may take a later break here in this segment, is a lot of issues have been thrown up, and it's gotten a lot of press lately, is about the tariffs. And what are your just thoughts right now on the tariffs? And for those people who watch the market every morning when they get up, it's up 3.5% today across the board.
Yeah, market's doing a little better now today. It's been an up and down. I don't know if you saw it. Was it yesterday that within a minute, I mean, it went up and then it went back down a few seconds later, just based on potential statements that were made. This is, you know, the economy needs stability, obviously, and we need to regain the confidence back in the markets. And the tariff conversation that we're seeing has impacted that. No question about it. The markets have reacted to that. Part of what we're going to be discussing with the president tonight is this issue. He strongly believes in the long-term effect of this and where this is going to go, and leveling the playing field. Also, just like in the other conversations, I think people understand that the United States has been taken advantage of in a lot of these trade relationships, and that we need to be working on that. What some are very uncomfortable with is at the speed that it's happening and how it happened, basically. And the market's reacted to that. No secret there. So we need to continue to look at each one of these relationships individually. I think the president is open to having these discussions. He's having them country by country in terms of where this needs to go, and make sure that that we put ourselves in a position where we can have the long-term gain out of these relationships. And you know my story, my history with working with the Arizona-Mexico Commission, specifically trade with Mexico and Canada, our North American partners, Arizona wins in these relationships. Now, can it be improved? Yes. Are there tariffs that Mexico imposes in the U.S. that the U.S. doesn't impose in Mexico? Yes, that's also true. So I think that's what the president is aiming to look at. I think it does need to be looked at it, and we need to come to a conclusion very quickly here. I don't think these are permanent and these are long-term tariffs either. These are tools that the president has to bring people to the table to renegotiate these trade agreements or trade relationships, and that's what he's doing. So we just have to, at this point, just be patient with the process a little bit. It's really difficult, and I really empathize with people that are taking the hit in the market. I'm hearing from them, of course, and even our importers also, that they end up eating the cost of this, and then it's passed on to the consumer. So I don't think the tariffs is the long-term solution that we're looking at here, and I'm eager to move this forward and get out from under this stage of the process and go to a more robust and fair trade relationship with these countries where we can both have a win-win situation. But the way it was working, it wasn't working, and that trade deficit kept growing with the majority of countries around the world. So something needed to be done. This is a very bold move. And again, I'm not historically a fan of tariffs, and I really hope that we can move forward on from where we are right now pretty quickly.
Well, I think there would be a lot of benefit if it could get down to, as a lot of people advocate for, is just no tariffs at all. It's just do business and see how it all pans out. But I think you're well aware of the impact that we may have down on the southern border, and our trade partner being with Mexico, so critical to the state of Arizona. I appreciate having your voice there and hope you ensure that the leadership back in D.C. understands that as well. Let's switch topics real quickly. We talked about one of the highest effective congressmen back in D.C., and yet you're still being criticized in the press and the public for actually getting those things done. 2-year cycle as a congressman, are you ever allowed not to campaign? Because you've already got two Democratic challengers out against you, one who has already officially began her campaign as well.
I think it's up to like 7 or something, 6 or 7 Democrats that have jumped in. It's something along those lines. And that's the nature of this district, unfortunately. You know, I kind of chuckle because I hear some of my colleagues here on the Republican side, and you know, they go through a little criticism, and my God, they feel like the sky is falling. And I'm just like, guys, this is my life every single day. It's just, you know, whatever you end up doing, you're going to hear the feedback from one side or the other. And that's part of the nature of the district, which I embrace. We get held accountable. Some people can win their district once, and then quite honestly, they don't get challenged again at all later on. We have the majority of districts in Arizona are like that. You just got to win that primary one time, and then you're locked in for as long as you want to be in there. And that's unfair to the voters because the accountability is low on that. In a district like mine, the accountability is there every single cycle, every 2 years. Now, do I wish that you know, we would get a little more time to actually do the job and be able to demonstrate what we're doing? But honestly, in this case, and I say this because I'm on the Republican side, obviously, the Democrat side, they just take every single opportunity to make it a political gain, a political move, and they, you know, to not allow for the things to play out and for us to actually do our job. I mean, the all these little videos and attacks started happening in early February of this year. We're looking at 2 years from the election, and this is already happening. So it's not the funnest part of the job, but I know it is part of the nature of the district. And you know, we're going to get it done. We're going to win again. And we're going to win with results, not just a good campaign, but actually results.
And Congressman, before I let you go, I just wanted to bring up one last thought. You came into town last week for the memorial service for Congressman Raul Grijalva. It was really one, a magnificent service, large, full cathedral. You were there along with a lot of other members of Congress and both Republicans and Democrats. Can you kind of share what the thoughts on that day were, with including my understanding flew in the morning and you flew back in the afternoon because the business in D.C. continued to roll?
That's right. So actually I flew in earlier that week into Washington. I think it was on Tuesday or Monday that week. I can't remember. And then flew back down on Wednesday for the service, flew back up Wednesday evening and then flew back down to Arizona for the weekend on Thursday. So it was a back and forth week, but I needed to be there. And yeah, there were three Republican members. David Schweikert was there, who you know, and also Bruce Westerman, who was the chairman of Natural Resources, where Raul served, and myself. So obviously way more Democrats than Republicans that were there, but it was important for me to be there. I knew him. I'd known him for decades. We seldom agreed on any kind of policy or politics. He actually purposely campaigned against me. But when it came down to having conversations and actually locking arms in a few issues that benefited our district, like the Udall Foundation, for example, and then reauthorizing that helps the university and a lot of students that are low income to be able to have access to higher education. These kind of things we could see eye to eye on, and we worked on that bill. We also did an event together. I don't know if you remember. We had a fireside chat discussion. Again, we disagreed. He quoted Carter. I quoted Reagan. And we knew where we stood. But when it comes down to the humanity of our district and the struggle and the battle that him and his family went through health-wise, I think those are the moments that we have to remember that people are people. So happy to be there and happy to work with anyone that wants to work with us to get things done.
And Congressman, I was happy to see you there. I appreciate all you do. I will also remember it's billion with a B. Best of luck this week, and I appreciate you joining us this morning on The Morning Voice.
Thanks so much, Ted. Talk to you soon.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back after the break. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell, with Brandon Kraft behind the glass. And I want to welcome and thank Blake Morlock for his patience and help this morning to allow Congressman Ciscomani come on. Blake, thank you for joining us.
Hey, no problem, Ted. Glad to be here.
Well, I always appreciate our conversations. Blake and I talked for probably 30 or 40 minutes last night and go, well, we're going to have no problem filling the time. So Blake Morlock, as I first got introduced to you, was the columnist for What the Devil Won't Tell You. That's published in the Tucson Sentinel. But before we get into some of the issues, Blake, you publish for the Sentinel. I believe you also do a little writing in the Agenda. And a lot of our listeners might not understand this alternative news media.
The two versions of me?
Yeah. So can you kind of explain that and how it works?
Yeah, I got one piece that's kind of a column. It's just, hey, here's me going off on a single issue. But increasingly, it feels like I do another one called the Tucson Agenda. And what it is I just go over the, 14 different agendas, up to 14 different agendas that are government meetings around Tucson. And it gives me kind of an opportunity to tell readers what the government is up to. I provide little synopses of the issues that each local government is dealing with, and things I think they would find interesting. And some weeks it's short, and some weeks it's like a 14-hour job. So, but it's fun if you are like me and a local government geek.
Well, that's true. I mean, I think we both could be classified as local government geeks. I do believe that the closer you get to home, the more important the decisions have to make. I mean, we just had Congressman Ciscomani on, but we all know that everything that happens in D.C. gets all the press, gets a lot of the headlines. But when it comes down to what actually impacts us, I do believe it's more local, and that's a lot of the issues you cover.
Local and state. Yeah, local and state government are the two things that really affect you a lot. So it literally hits you where you live if you're dealing with things like zoning issues, traffic, housing costs. A lot of the big national issues, when it comes down to it, have to be dealt with locally.
So Blake, let's go there. Let's you look at the agendas. You keep an eye on what's happening at the city and as what's happening at the county. And we've got some interesting things going on there. Let's start a little bit with the talk on the county. There's with Supervisor Adelita Grijalva stepping aside to make a run for her father's old position in CD7 on Congress. Yeah. Collected her signatures in less than you know, 5 hours. And it looks like it's really going to come. There's a ton of folks that are trying to collect the signatures. We'll see what it's the final thing
is.
Yeah,
that's always that's always kind of the, you know, threshold number one is, do you get your signatures? It's usually not that hard to get your signatures. And I would, like, I encourage everybody to at least try to get involved with local government at some point. I've never met anybody who ran for office who said, man, do I regret that? Even if they, you know, even if they lose, you know, especially if they lose. Very often what will happen is they'll, I remember talking to Matt Hintz, very, like, back when he was a doctor. And somebody said, I got this guy who wants to meet you and ask you about running for office, because he knew I was a local journalist. And so I told him, I said, you know, you do this, 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 and this, get your signatures, run, figure out a message. And I told him, and when you lose, you'll learn a lot, and then you'll run again. And with sometimes it's like, you know, he kind of created a monster.
that was kind of some pretty amazing advice, because it happened. You kind of forecast the future, yeah, and that's how it happened.
And that's because you learn a lot. But, yeah, it's going to be an interesting race. I mean, if I were to put an early establish an early favorite, a guy like Andres Cano is probably that guy. But you don't know who's going to catch fire. You don't know who's not. But he's been working sort of in the background. He was a former state lawmaker. But he's been working to kind of energize the Democratic Party in that part of town. And it will be almost certainly a Democrat. But, you know, just because of how the district is drawn, and it's like there's only one real toss-up. At least there has only been just one toss-up, but the with the county trending a little more Democratic, and especially District 1 and 4 kind of trending a little more blue,
Yeah, you're seeing
it's
a lot
of climb for a Republican.
Absolutely, you're seeing a lot of that now. For the replacement for Supervisor Grijalva, it is required to be a Democrat. The names were released yesterday on a lot of the different folks out there. Andres Cano, you mentioned him already. I believe the Sentinel is where I saw the article that broke that out. And interesting seeing the current recently elected PCC member of the PCC. Pima Community College Board of Governors, Carla Morales, also put her name in for consideration. Yep. So I do think it's going to move fast. My understanding is they're going to, the League of Women Voters will do an event this week, and then next week the Board of Supervisors on the 15th will make their selection and immediately install them in, because there's a lot of issues going on with issues like the RTA and other stuff that they've got to determine, because Supervisor...
Yeah, they've got to fill it. Yeah, and for some reason in my head, I had it completed. That's a good... He had to run again. No, yes, it is the Board of Supervisors who will be picking it. It'll be a Democrat. Yeah, yeah. I was conflating that one with the congressional office, where you do have to run. But, yeah, it'll be the Board of Supervisors picking, and if it's a tie, it goes to the clerk of the board who can and has selected, been the ultimate decision maker. That goes all the way back to Ray Carroll, who was selected by Lori Gadoshian.
Yep. There's the history coming out of your brain on that one, Blake.
Yeah.
So you bring up a really good point. And this, there's a little couple differences on this selection. I want to get your take on at least one of them. One, there's only four supervisors now, because Adelita Grijalva has officially been, they accepted her resignation. So there is a potential for it to be a 2-2 tie and go to the clerk. The thing I want to hear your thoughts on is, last time it was a mandate from not all, but a lot of the supervisors, that whoever they were going to select would not be allowed, or they did not want them to have any desire to run again. And that's how Sylvia Lee got selected. It was because she was not going to run again. This time they've made it very clear that they're okay if it's somebody that's going to run. Why do you think there's the change?
I don't know. I don't like this. I don't like the idea that anybody can confer incumbency on a candidate other than the voters. But I don't know why they would. I thought that was a good idea. That's what they did with Sylvia Lee. But I think that's bad. In fact, there was a period a few years ago when basically it was like half of the county elected officials were appointed, and then they got to run as an incumbent, and then they just kept winning. Notable exception being the sheriff, Chris Nanos, who got defeated by Mark Napier, but then came back and won in a tough year for a Republican. I don't think it's good government.
I tend to agree with you on that one, Blake, and it's going to be interesting to see how that comes out, because you're right, Richard Elias, there were several that in this county, particularly, and in the city of Tucson, incumbency is the key to holding on to that seat.
We don't vote out people. Yeah. The last one was actually Nina Trasoff. That was a campaign I actually worked on when I was when I went over to the other side briefly.
I was going to say, what side of that one did you work on? So you were working with council member Kasachik?
I was working on that one. We got Kasachik, who I thought was great. So it's like, yeah, my whole thing was for the whole time Kasachik was in office is I called him a Tea Party extremist when I was a communications director. And it's like, I am burning in hell for that.
That didn't accept. So, Blake, we're going to jump to a break here. This will be a short one. And then when we come back, let's transition and talk about the city of Tucson. A lot going on at their council meeting tonight, and you're probably familiar with the agenda.
Yeah.
So we'll be right back. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back after the break. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. With me on the line from the Tucson Sentinel and the Tucson Agenda is Blake Morlock. Blake, again, appreciate you joining us.
Hey, no problem.
All right, so let's dive into to some of the city activities. You mentioned that as part of your Tucson Agenda, you've 14 agendas. Bless you for doing that.
not all every week.
It's still a lot. And the funny part is when you talk to some of the elected officials, they tell you need to look at our agendas. You need to see what's on. That's how you know what's going on. That's how you can provide your input. So the city, I don't want to go into any depth on 414 and that proposition and why it went down, because I think what now we're seeing is the city having to react. Last week's meeting went to 11:30 at night. It was probably one of the longest city council meetings. And tonight's is probably also stuffed with a lot of information. What do you think we need to look forward to tonight and see? What are you looking for when you look at that agenda?
The big one I'm looking at is the hottest issue will probably be differential water rates. The city wants to charge people who live in the county but are Tucson Water customers, wants to charge them more money, basically. And so if it sounds familiar, it's because it happened. They tried it in 2021. The county sued. Judge threw out the increase, the differential water rates, because the city hadn't provided a study. And this time, oh boy, did they provide a study. I read parts of it, and if you really got to love accounting to look at that, and as I point out in my piece, not have your eyes crossed. But it justifies a higher rate. But the Rex Scott's opinion on this was, oh, my God, this is annoying. They're doing this again. So you might end up seeing another lawsuit come out of that. Interestingly, it looks like the new rates that the city is imposing are going to be higher than what they were before they did the study.
So, well, this brings up to a discussion. the concept of regionalism, and that's one you and I have talked about. We've talked about RTA, we've talked about other, and there's really, I think that's what right now the Pima County is missing, is we are missing really a focus on regionalism. And the argument with the water, Blake, and you've been around and covered this for a long time, is when the CAP water came down here and it was determined by the leaders at large at that time, and I understand they were from they aren't the current leaders, they were the leaders from large then, they agreed the city of Tucson would be responsible for the CAP. And I believe the quote that you hear with some of the people that were involved, that they would ensure that there was water from mountain range to mountain range in Pima County. Now they're talking differential rates. Of course, at that time, the county was going to do all the wastewater. Well, you've had Marana Sioux, and they are doing their own wastewater. Now the city's talking about increasing their wastewater. What's your thoughts on regionalism versus each one of the municipalities kind of taking care of themselves?
I just think that one of my real pet peeves when I hear about a spat between the city and the county, or the county and the city, is it's like more than half of the people, I believe 55% of the county board of supervisors, constituents live in the city. And I think people forget that they're city residents, and 100% of city residents vote for county elect their county supervisors. So it's like it kind of ends up being this thing where the governments themselves fight with each other, but they can kind of forget that they can kind of forget that they have the same voters. Second is that the county legally, the way they set them up and the counties up in the days of yore, they did law enforcement, criminal justice, jail courts, and public health and some zoning. They are set up to be rural governments. Pima County, just because of growth patterns, has ended up with a huge portion. More people, I believe, live in unincorporated Pima County than live in unincorporated Maricopa County. So they have had to do more urban services just as a result of growth patterns. But it's, you really want your city to be delivering the urban services. They're just legally in a better place to do it because charters, because of local control, they have more power. And it's so the county offloading some of that to the city and focusing more on its stuff would be a form of regionalism. I have a crazy idea, and there are people at the county who still won't talk to me, that we should take a regional approach to taxes. In other words, the county exists off the primary, off of property taxes, which means they don't get to cash in on the good times, but they're insulated from more of the bad times. But the city, it relies almost entirely on sales taxes. And the city could use a little more property taxes just to stabilize their budget, and the county has long wanted a sales tax. I'm like, why don't you guys get together and swap?
I think you're seeing that, because part of the problem with 414 was it was such a huge difference between the sales tax and inside the city and outside the city. It impacts business.
Yeah, there was that. There were other things I think that kind of doomed that. But I mean, it is a case where when the only tool you have our sales taxes, which is kind of how the state legislature sets up government in Arizona to address these issues, the sales tax is really
absolutely. Blake, I appreciate you coming on with me again today. Next time, let's make it for an hour, because there's always so much we can talk about. I appreciate your flexibility this morning. Thank you. All right, you're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk, and that was Blake Morlock with the Tucson. Welcome back. You are listening to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. The Morning Voice from 7 to 9, 5 days a week, 5 different hosts, 5 different programs, and 5 different formats. So encourage everyone to to listen in during your morning drive from 7 to 9, and you'll hear a whole different slew of things. A little bit of politics here for some of us, not so much for others, a little tourism, a lot of trying to explain about how important our region is to all of our days, all of our lives. I do want to take one moment here to take a look back. Today is the 25th, I hate to say anniversary, but it was 25 years ago today that a V-22 Osprey that was being operated by the United States Marine Corps crashed out at Marana, and it resulted in the loss of 19 U.S. Marines that were on board. It intensified the debate of the Osprey at the time. It was still in its test program. It's a very unique plane. As a pilot, I can appreciate the technology that was put into it. Now it's really an aircraft, a plane, and a helicopter. I've told a lot of people that every time I got in the helicopter, my favorite moment was when the helicopter landed, because there were two things. It's a flying rock. You're beating the air into submission. And the other side was, I knew at some point the pilot would look at me and say, "Sir, do you want to have some fun?" Which meant we were probably going down to treetop level. And that was where I was, for a pilot in a plane with an ejection seat, it's a whole different story when you're in an airplane.
That's Apocalypse Now kind of stuff.
It's crazy. But the thing that I want people to understand is that it was a tragedy losing 19 Marines out at Moran, and you can still go out and there's still an area out at the airport to honor them. It was a test program at the time, and the Osprey has proven over time, once you get through that test phase, once you get it operational. I just had a friend of mine whose son, the friend, flew F-16s with me throughout my career, and his son just got assigned to the V-22 Osprey in the Navy. And so it's making an impact for our country. And people forget, we now have so much press, you hear about some of the tragic accidents. Test pilots and what they do to create the aircraft that are going to protect our country are important. I just wanted to take a moment and mention and value their loss of lives on that day.
For sure.
So the voice you're hearing with me is the voice of John Lies, President and CEO of Mister. I guess that's the official name. I almost wore the Mister sweatshirt in today.
Mister Car Wash, the Cadillac of the car care industry.
But it is, and there's so much that's going on inside that industry right now. It's like Mr. Car Wash showed a model, and now everybody wants to replicate things that went good, but we will get to that. So, John, I appreciate it. John and I do go back. Our boys played lacrosse together. There was no more of a fervent fan than John Lies. So whenever I had a chance, I would find you on the sidelines, because those were good times back when they were playing ball.
Kindred spirits. We were both lacrosse dads that were pretty intense.
A little intense.
Love the game. It's a violent game, though. Those guys hit each other with sticks.
They do. They do. As I said, I wish I had known that part of it when I was growing up, because I had to decide between hockey and then all the sunshine sports in California. I picked the sunshine sports, and I started playing hockey when I was 25. But I never, did you play lacrosse growing up?
I did, yeah. Okay. So you were a basketball guy too, right?
I was football and basketball.
So basketball guys are great lacrosse guys too,
yeah,
because there's so much, left hand, right hand.
It's hockey on feet. I mean, I see it as hockey on feet, because the violence, the collisions, some of the strategies. So on the engagement hour, a lot of what I'm trying to do is to remind people that we've all got responsibilities to our communities. We've got a lot of great rights in this country. I still, no matter what people think about the situations today, tomorrow, 3 years from now, I do believe we've got the greatest country in the world. That's why so many people want to come here. But I try to do it through a little bit of storytelling. This is one of the reasons I wanted to have you on. Mr. Car Wash is a success story, but it didn't happen overnight. And I want to, I'd like you, if you could kind of share your story, what brought you to Tucson, how you became engaged, how did you get involved in the car wash industry, and kind of the beginning, so people get that it can happen.
Yeah, so I was born in Long Island, New York, and that's how lacrosse came to be. It was the most popular sport. They actually had trouble fielding baseball teams because lacrosse was wildly popular, both in Maryland and New York, Long Island specifically. But moved here in 1979. I was 16 years old, and my dad was a professor at the University of Arizona, and so that's what brought us to sunny Tucson, and went to Catalina High School, the one on Pima and Dodge, then went to the University of Arizona, graduated in 1987, got my first job up in Phoenix, working in consumer packaged goods for Nestle, learned all the basics. And I'm trying to be succinct here, but was made an offer to come work for a small entrepreneurial startup called Blue Coral Systems, which sold specialty chemistry to the commercial car wash industry, which is how I got into this crazy, wacky world of car washing.
So define specialty chemistry real quick.
Yeah, so it's chemicals for detergents, waxes to clean a car, make the car shine. And so we basically sold to, on the B2B, the industrial side, to different car washes across the United States. And it was a really eye-opening kind of best practices opportunity for me to see different formats, different operators, different ways of doing business. And I spent 7 years with them, left for a little bit to pursue kind of an entrepreneurial opportunity that didn't really pan out. And then was lured back to Mr. Car Wash, which at the time was a 32-store chain based here in Tucson that was really just getting its feet underneath it. And they were looking to kind of expand and build out. The industry, when you look at it and just zoom out for a second, very fragmented. It's a mom-and-pop space primarily, so there's no national chains or super regional chains. We're fixing to change all that, by the way. But the investment thesis was, and I cringe when I hear these words because sometimes it comes with a negative association, but was to consolidate and roll up a fragmented industry. And so through mergers and acquisitions, primarily buying other people's businesses and making them better, that was our approach to scale and to get bigger. So if you look at Tucson, and Tucson's a really good kind of microcosm of what we're doing across the United States, we went in and over time bought Simoni's, which was the former Octopus car wash chain, the Capen's car wash chain, a company called Arizona Auto Wash, then a couple more bolt-ons to get to what today is, I think, 23, 24 stores here in Tucson. But buying other people's mousetraps and making them better. So I get questions all the time. We have a store on Country Club and Speedway that we're in the throes of remodeling.
Yeah, that one's kind of infamous because it was, like you said, it needs to be remodeled to fit the Mr. Car Wash.
Exactly. So taking other people's layouts and footprints and trying to optimize those is not for the faint of heart, but we did it, and we've been doing it over now close to 400 car washes that we've acquired, over 100 businesses, unique businesses. But then in recent years, and I'm kind of jumping around here a little bit, but in recent years, we've moved to building our own stores. And so if you look at the store on Keno Boulevard across from the Commerce Park there, excuse me, you know, that's our new model, and that's born out of, again, all the different things that we've learned over the years. So bottom line is we have scaled up to now close to 500, and it's a moving target, 520 locations. We're the nation's largest car wash chain.
How many different states?
We're in 21 states, 73 MSAs right now. And, you know, we're just, I think, less than 5% market share U.S. So we're kind of small in the overall scheme of things.
Which you are, but you're not. Because I remember the first time I came down and you gave me a tour of the headquarters before you even had the second building. And, and that's something we'll get to.
Yep.
Tucson headquartered national chain. But at that time, you pointed out to me, I was ready. 2%, you had 2% of the market share and you were the largest car wash.
We like to say internally,
industry in the country.
Yeah, that we're a tiny little dot on a tiny little speck in the outermost stretches of the stratosphere, and that's really to put things in perspective. So our opportunity, even though we're large at 520 some odd stores, we'll do $1 billion in revenue this year, 330-ish million in EBITDA. Market cap is around $2.5 billion. And again, the market's been a little wonky. Maybe we should talk about that as well. But we're just getting started. And so for us, as we set our sights on something much bigger and greater, we think that we can ultimately get to what we believe is a 10% market share, which as the market continues to expand, would imply that we can get to 2,000 stores and hopefully someday $1 billion in EBITDA, which would be a really remarkable feat. So right now we're washing 100 million cars. If I could just rattle off some stats here because we're really proud. So I'm taking a little bit of a victory lap, Ted.
No, it's okay.
But we've been growing like weeds, and it's been a lot of fun.
Can you just define EBITDA for everybody so they know what you're talking about?
Yeah, sorry, I'm getting technical
That's the accountant coming out in you.
Yeah, so it's earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. It's kind of a normalizing tool to look at cash flow, basically, and measure profitability before investments in capital investments such as buildings and plants and things of that nature.
Yeah, no, it's, I think the growth is amazing. I mean, you talked about 2%, you were largest, now you're at 5, still the largest throughout the nation, and now the goal is to give to 10. Let's real quick, just before we go to the break, let's talk about you had a decision and a point to make. Yep. And what I really appreciate about it is you committed to Tucson.
Right.
We've had so many headquarters leave Tucson right in the middle of some of your largest growth.
Yeah.
So some of your largest growth, you decided to stay here.
Our largest state in terms of number of stores, total revenue, is Texas, actually. Number two is Florida. Number three is California. So there's really a strong argument that we should have been headquartered in Houston specifically, which is our number one market. But given our roots and the fact that we started here, we said, hey, let's plant our roots here and let's build out this organization, which, again, was not easy. Scaling a company is hard. Building one person at a time takes time. But we've done it, and I'm proud to call Tucson our home. And, you know, unfortunately, there's not a lot of national chains that are headquartered here, and I think we're the only one that's publicly traded right now. We just switched. We initially went public on the New York Stock Exchange, but then we switched over to NASDAQ here a couple months back due to some economic benefits that we found very attractive.
Now, did that change the designator?
What do you mean?
You were MCW on York.
We're still MCW.
I was going to say, because I haven't seen anything change, so I was getting a little worried there.
Yeah.
Well, before we go to the break, I would just want to say thank you. Thank you for that. Tucson, Pima County, needs to retain their business headquarters here. We suffered a lot when everything started regionalizing, or, you know, especially on the corporate headquarters.
Yeah, I'll never forget. So I've traveled a lot. You know, we both travel all the time. Mm-hmm. And I was coming down the escalator at Tucson International Airport many years ago. And I remember when Mayor Walkup was heading up the city, and there was a kind of a banner that said, "Welcome to Tucson, Optics Valley." And I found that really interesting because Tucson was trying to find their footing and their niche. And, you know, everyone wants to be the next Austin or the next Silicon Valley. And so leveraging the U of A optics strength, and I thought, okay, this is going to be, you know, the angle in which Tucson's known for. But as you and I both know, that we have we're over-indexed on government in terms of jobs and you know, with Davis-Monthan, and then we've got Raytheon. But we don't have enough other industries, in my view. And so a diversified economy, I think, is good for the city, good for the state. And so we're happy that we technically are a consumer discretionary retailer and doing something that no one else has ever done before. And so we're very proud of the fact that we're headquartered here in Tucson, helping to diversify the economy. And most importantly, Ted, creating a lot of high-paying jobs for the city of Tucson. And I can rattle off some statistics if you want.
Well, as you know, as a member of Southern Arizona Leadership Councils, we believe that the solutions for addressing crime, poverty, are just that, high-paying jobs and opportunities. So I appreciate it. We're going to go to a break right now, John, but that's the voice of John Lai, the president and CEO of Mr. Car Wash, the largest car wash company in the nation. And we'll talk about that journey when we get back. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm your Ted Maxwell. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. I guess I could be your Ted Maxwell too, but I'm your host, Ted Maxwell, and that's Brandon Croft behind the glass killing it today. It's been a challenging show already because of all the different all the different guests coming in different ways. And right now I've got with me John Lai, the president and CEO of Mr. Car Wash. And if you do want to call in and you want to actively ask him a question about his operations or about car wash industry in general and where it's trending, you can call, reach us at 520-790-2040. So please don't hesitate to call. You're probably in your car somewhere. Do it safely. Maybe you could drive off to Mr. Car Wash and go through and get it done and call us. As long as you're not talking to us inside the car wash, I think we'd be able to talk to you.
Ted, we've got a store within 7.5 minutes of anyone in Tucson. And
oh, now that's a stat.
You can get in and out in 5 minutes or less with a clean, dry, shiny car. Hey, Ted, before we get started, I've got some exciting news to share with you. So right before Christmas, Christy and I are now officially grandparents.
We outstanding.
Have our first grandchild, Ella May Lai, my son, Matt, and beautiful daughter-in-law.
Oh, Matt. Allie. Matt was the first one that got you there. Outstanding.
Can you believe it? So I don't smoke cigars, but I brought you a gift in honor of Ella May, who's absolutely beautiful. And this is Christy's famous Minnesota banana bread. And I brought three pieces. So don't eat them all. Share it with the staff.
Thank you. Okay. But, I will.
This is compliments of Christy.
So. Brandon's definitely earned a slice of this. So it's good. I appreciate it. And congratulations.
Thank you.
I don't think there was anything better in life than holding your first grandchild.
Oh my gosh.
Because you then realize that when it's your kid, you're worried about how am I going to do this? How am I going to make it? But this is what will determine our legacy kids raise kids.
Totally. Totally. This is the next generation, you know? And we are so proud and so
overwhelming. Well, that's outstanding. Yeah. Congratulations. Well,
thank you.
Hopefully the first of several. I've got two.
Okay.
So
one other thing too, I noticed that you didn't win your bracket. And again, if I could brag a little bit, I, for the first time in a long time, won our bracket and I picked Florida. And my secret technique was picking my favorite mascot. And I just happened to like alligators. So I got lucky by picking Florida. And
so you grew up on Long Island.
Yep.
You moved to Arizona and you like alligators.
Well, yeah, go figure.
Yeah,
I like Gila Monsters too.
It was an amazing game last night. I did not think Florida played up to their capability, but just the fact that they had the better players eventually panned out for them.
In Houston in the Big 12, I mean, you remember Faisalama Jama back in the day? But those guys, this team, they were relentless on the boards. And I mean, there was three guys at least chasing down every loose ball for Houston. That's a scrappy team.
Yeah, absolutely. And there was a video that they posted this week showing their practices and their loose ball drills.
Oh, really?
I'm shocked that more of the folks didn't get injured. Actually, one of their players was injured in one of their rebounding drills in practice. They practice as hard as they play.
And shout out to the Cats to get in the Sweet 16, right? I mean,
you know, the funny part is when Katie and I sat and watched the One Shining Moment.
Oh, yeah.
We both said the same thing. If Caleb Love doesn't get in there after his performance against Duke and other, we'd be extremely disappointed. And sure enough, they had one of his slams and the patented two hands, two fists at the side. And so that was good to see. There was also some videos in that you saw people scoring on the U of A. So that wasn't so good. But they had, you think about where we started the season talking with them. I'm sorry for those who aren't interested in sports, we're divulging there.
Yeah.
They had a year of what we thought they could be.
Yeah.
You know,
Tommy Lloyd did a great job.
And they did. He did. And there's a lot of challenges at the U of A, a lot of challenges in college athletics. We both, I know Matt went on to play college lacrosse. My son Charlie played a year at the U of A in college lacrosse. And I knew, did you play in college?
I did. Yeah. For the U of A as
Yeah.
Well.
That's what I thought. I thought that was one of the connections. That's why, you know, Charlie said he'd run into you at all those lacrosse parties still.
Yeah.
lacrosse players never stop going to the lacrosse parties.
My mantra is never grow up, Ted.
Well, okay. So let's talk about how the company grew up. All right. So
sure.
John, again, the president and CEO of Mr. Car Wash, 2% when I first talked to you several years ago, you're up to 5% now. And you know, a lot of that's phenomenal. But how did you go about walking the company through that growth? You talked about acquisition, could you talk about the challenges of retrofitting and kind of the changing mantra of where you're going now and how you're going to get to that 10%.
Well, I think, you know, this is not a unique stat, but the number one reason why companies typically fail is due to lack of capital. And when you look at this space, it's pretty capital intensive. So today, to build a car wash in today's dollars, it's a $6.5-7 million venture, which is pretty material, right? And so to scale at size requires a whole lot of money to do so. And so in our early years, we struggled, right? We had limited access to capital. We had some what we call toxic debt, some very expensive debt. And we were kind of hamstrung. And so for the first third of our existence, and we're coming up on our 30-year anniversary, so really for the first 10 years, we were flat as a pancake. And it was less fun. It was very, very difficult for us to figure out our way, but what, you know, so the pain and the challenges is where the growth occurs. We, out of necessity, had to become really, really good operators and focus on all the fundamentals, which is get a clean car, do it quickly, do it efficiently, and then deliver it with a smile. Midway through the journey, we had a partner in a company called OnCap, which is a private equity firm out of Toronto that came in and helped us unlock some of the value that we had on our balance sheet. And we did some sale-leaseback financing where we were able to sell the land and the building to the real estate investment trust and then take the proceeds and help fund future growth. So that was a real kind of turning point for our company in terms of unlocking some dry powder, if you will, to go on the first wave of growth. And so we started more aggressively acquiring independent businesses and moving into new states. It was kind of the go-go years. And so for that next, I'm going to call it 10 years-ish, a lot of learning and a lot of trial and error. But we, again, acquired over 100 companies to get to close to 400 stores, built a little over 140 stores now. And so, you know, here we sit with this kind of blend of businesses that we've bought as well as businesses that we built.
Well, we actually talked too much basketball on this break. So when we come back, we're going to continue that. And I want to talk about the transition from the ones you bought to now growing your own. Sure. When we get back, and we'll go down that, and want to talk about how you treat your employee. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. I love the fact that Brendan went to the depths and found me a Springsteen song that mentioned car wash. How you pulled that one off, I'm not sure.
You can actually thank Matt Neely for that special guest appearance here. He texted me and gave me one idea for a good car wash song here.
That's outstanding. I think that's probably preferable than the standard car wash song. Yeah. That one I think is probably overplayed in the car wash industry, but that was a good cut.
Yeah, I'm glad he sent that, but he should, you know, be relaxing. Because he's on vacation.
Yeah, I know. I've noticed his vacation's been pretty communicating with
us. I know
us.
He's listening probably so, right now.
So on the Morning Voice tomorrow at 7 o'clock, Grant Kruger, who combines food and politics, has a full show for you. So if you tune in tomorrow at 7 o'clock, you're going to hear him talk to both Christine Walter Hall, the Chief Operating Officer of Kodak Health Recovery and Wellness. So that's going to talk about some of the things going on to make some improvements in this region and trying to address some of the issues we've got. But he's also going to have John Aldecoa, the owner of Brother John's Beer, Bourbon, and Barbecue. And if you haven't been there, it's some phenomenal barbecue. And if you want to see a list or a rack of bourbons on the wall, that's a place to go. And because he covers all aspects of things in our community, he's going to close with Mo Asnani, owner of D2 Dispensaries. So Grant's hitting the full spectrum tomorrow, so that should be one heck of a show. Grant always brings power and enthusiasm to the show, so I strongly encourage you to tune in.
We actually are neighbors to the downtown dispensary, and I've met Mo, and he's a really good entrepreneur. And Grant's terrific, by the way.
They both. And that's the strength of the entrepreneurism in Tucson. There's opportunities there, and there's a lot of people who are really good at it involved in the community. We've talked a lot about the financials, the growth, and all that, but the bottom line is what makes Mr. Carwash, Mr. Carwash, is your core values and your employees. So Can you kind of highlight what you're looking for and what you were looking for?
For sure. So there are kind of table stakes, things that we have to deliver upon and execute consistently day in and day out. And, you know, first and foremost, it's quality, right? So we got to get a clean, dry, shiny car. We're not perfect. It's very difficult. There's roughly 250 makes and models on the road. We're moving at a pretty quick clip and trying to balance speed with quality. And the longer you have, the better job you can do. But we know that people are pressed for time. So one of our kind of key elements to the value proposition is get you in and out in 5 minutes. In a perfect world, we can get you in and out in 3 minutes. So speed is paramount, I think, for today's busy consumer. So speed and quality kind of are no-brainers. And then we go to great lengths to make sure that our facilities are super clean. We clean our bathrooms 3 times an hour, which is kind of insane, but that sets the standard for cleanliness. And so when you drive through a Mr. Car Wash, if it's a 50-year-old store or a brand new store, you'll see bright, shiny equipment and clean walls, and you won't see a gum wrapper on the floor. What really sets us apart, though, is our people. And so we have over 6,500 employees nationwide, and they are critical to our success. So we are in this service business, and so customer service is part of the value proposition. And one of the things I hear most often when I go to cocktail parties is they won't rant or rave about our quality and speed, which have become somewhat expected. But they'll go out of their way to say, what is it about your people? They seem to be really happy and engaged, and they're waving and smiling every time I go there. And Ted, that's not by accident, right? We work very, very hard at focusing on culture. But before we even talk about culture, for us, and we call it our Maslow's hierarchy of needs, we look at the very foundational pieces to taking care of your people, which is paying them well, treating them well, offering comprehensive benefits, obviously training and supporting them, but then career path progression. And so we're really proud of the fact that when you look at our senior leadership team on the operations side, over 90% of them started off as hourly employees. So we have this really strong network of great operators. The heroes in our organization are the general managers that are running our stores. But we've really focused on this taking care of people and treating them right. So if I can back up for a second, looking at our stakeholder universe, and there was this famous economist called Milton Friedman back in the day, University of Chicago, that wrote this op-ed piece in the New York Times that said the sole purpose for an organization is to create shareholder value, full stop. And where I think Milton Friedman and a lot of folks have now debated that singular focus is that we actually have more folks in our ecosystem that we're responsible for. So obviously the customer is critical, shareholders without a doubt, right? So you have to be wildly profitable to return, a great return, outsized return for shareholders, which we've done year in and year out. But then we also have our team members and our employees. And so I think extra credit goes to companies that take care of their people and treat them well. And for us, it's good business. So when you invest in people, you get a higher level of engagement, higher level of quality, better customer service, speedier service. And so there's this virtuous cycle of take care of your people who take care of the customers. And Southwest Airlines famously said that, you know, we're going to focus on our people and forget about the shareholders. But the shareholders will eventually be taken care of, which they were until Southwest Airlines hit a speed bump here recently. So for us, that's kind of was the original three pieces of the stool, but then it's even more than that. So I think good companies are expected to be active in their community. They're expected to be good in the environment. Now as a publicly traded company, there's the media, there's government relations. And so as you can expect, I now have to serve multiple constituents, do you.
People are going to ask you questions, and you just brought up the environment.
Yeah.
Really, we wash cars. I'm a member of your Unlimited Club. I love the speed in and out. I never get out of my car. I go in, I get out. But there's a lot of confusion on, or maybe not even confusion. Washing a car uses water.
Yeah.
So how do you handle that response from those on the environmental side?
Yeah. So first of all, we take water conservation very seriously at Mr. Car Wash. We recycle over 15 gallons of water per car, which equates to, for our existing portfolio, roughly 30% of the water usage. For our new stores, close to 50%. And so if you went through our back rooms, you'd see very advanced water reclamation, water filtration systems that take the water, clean it, and then we can repurpose that through under chassis cleaning, some wheel washing, lower rocker panels, et cetera. So we're super efficient in how we use water because, again, at the end of the day, it's not only good for the environment, it's good for the bottom line. So every drop counts. And so anything we can do to reduce our fresh water consumption is good business, full stop. Again, we take it even further, though, because when you look at a home washer, for example, someone that washes in their driveway, there's been a lot of studies that show they'll use at least 80 gallons, in some cases north of 100 gallons of water per car. So washing your car at a commercial car wash is actually better for the environment because we're using a quarter of what a home washer would use. And almost every municipality knows that. And so we've had a couple situations over the last 30 years where I think it was Atlanta, there was a phase two drought in Austin, Texas, which is another big market for us. Lake Travis had a pump issue. And so they actually put not a moratorium, but a temporary freeze on non-staple services. And we were able to show that, hey, we're actually, if you're in a drought situation, it's better to stop washing in your driveway and go to a commercial car wash. So for all those reasons, we're happy to be, to contribute to using less water. And that's something that we're very proud of.
Well, I think it's definitely important, especially in a reason like region like Tucson and so the southwest portion of the United States, because you're going to hear about it a lot. I want to go back to one thing about your personnel. I was pretty amazed there that you said 90% of your management started out as hourly employees.
Yeah.
How do you ensure that? I mean, every time I go through, I see people smiling at me, waving at me. Your employees actually look like they're enjoying work. And they definitely sell that. How do you ensure that you keep the high quality folks?
So it starts with culture, and the culture of our organization when I first started, it was pretty intense, right? There was, I'm not going to say crack the whip mentality, but we looked at labor through a cost lens versus an investment lens. And that's the, you know, all of our KPIs and all the key performance indicators, all the things we were using to measure productivity, it was through the lens of how we can use less and from a labor perspective. Midway through our journey, there was a light bulb moment where we realized, again, if you pay people well and treat them well, they're going to be more productive. So measuring individual productivity is a little bit more difficult, but we see it show up time and time again. So I can draw a direct line between the investments that we've made in our people. So our average non-managerial hourly wage at store level is $18 per hour.
Yeah, that's good.
Our average salary at a headquarters, and we have over 200 salaried team members, and I extrapolate out my income because I can skew the numbers, is north of $140,000 a year. So we're really, you know, so there's a lot of guys that talk a big game about culture and mission, vision, and values. The first question I ask is, what do you pay your people, right? So you know, that's really where the rubber hits the road. And then, do we offer comprehensive benefits? And I'm not going to turn this into a commercial, but we make sure that everyone's eligible for PTO, for, you know, universal health care, et cetera, because those things are super important, and not a lot of retailers do that.
And there are more and more people now asking, as part of the interview process, you know, I really am excited about the job, but what's your healthcare coverage?
100%.
It's a fact. It's important. So, John, appreciate you filling us in on that. When we come back from the break, I would like to take a second, just talk about some of the challenges and changing landscapes in the car wash industry.
You got it.
All right. That's the voice of John Lai, the president and CEO of Mr. Car Wash. And you're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm Ted Maxwell. My guest today is John Lai, the president and CEO of Mr. Car Wash, a Tucson headquartered company. The growth has been phenomenal. We've highlighted a lot of that. But you've proven that the car wash industry can become consolidated in some parts. So we're seeing more, at least I'm noticing more car washes moving into this region that have the same feel. And so what's the changing landscape?
Take it easy. They can try to mimic our look and feel, but it's hard to replicate, and it's hard to do it at scale. But no, all joking aside, our success has attracted a lot of interest, particularly from institutional capital in the form of private equity. And so private equity has come barreling into the category. There's roughly, on a national basis, a little over 40 PE firms that have staked out their spot by acquiring regional chains. Superstar Car Wash, for example, which you see here in Tucson, is one example of that. They're headquartered out of Phoenix, but they're PE-backed. And so, listen, competition, that old adage, makes you better, and it's certainly making us sharpen our saw and continuously improve and look at every aspect of our business. But I can't think of a category out there, Ted, and if it's the chicken sandwich category or you name it, that's not highly competitive. And so, in the end, I think the best operators, the folks that deliver the most value for their customers, will win. And because we've been at it, and because we're not a overnight success story, we've learned that over time, when you take care of your customers and treat them right and treat them with respect, and honor their time and make sure that we deliver upon that quality promise. And then for us, we use the word hospitality, right? So hospitality in the car wash as a service provider. You know, we talk about the wave and a smile, but if you think about it, a lot of times, so Ted, you're a busy guy, you're in a rush. Sometimes you'll come through our store with your windows up and you're an Unlimited Wash Club member, which has allowed us to allow you to keep your car clean all the time. That was hard for me to say. And so you're kind of driving through with your windows up, but that nonverbal wave and smile is recognizing you as a member, letting you know that we deeply value your business. And it's just another, again, way for us to recognize and connect. And so, as corny as this sounds, there's a human connection that's really important to our business. If you think about it, this is a very kind of utilitarian service, right? So we're clumped, I think, not in a good way, in this consumer discretionary category on Wall Street. And right now, with consumer discretionary in a higher inflationary environment, you know, a lot of economists and a lot of portfolio managers specifically would say, hey, maybe we need to reweight our portfolios away from things that are non-staple. But what I have been attempting to educate the world about is that once you start keeping your car clean, it's hard to drive a dirty car. And even when you have a little bit of film, some pollen on your hood, or you have a bug splat on your windshield, it drives you nuts. I know it drives me nuts. And so, you know, we have this subscription plan called the Unlimited Wash Club, where for a very economical fee, you can keep your car clean all the time. But most importantly, it allows you to skip the line, get in and out really, really quickly. And that has been a game changer. 75% of our business is subscription.
That's the number that amazes me. And it comes down to loyalty. If you can get folks both on the subscription plan, yep. But it's then the loyalty. When they need a car wash, they're going to seek out a Mr. Car Wash, which I've learned today is 7.5 minutes from anywhere in Tucson.
Yeah. Isn't that great?
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. So we've got about a minute and a half left. What's the future? Oh, sorry, Brandon, you're rocking it today. We've got a couple more minutes, okay. But let's go ahead and go there anyway. What do you see the future plan for Mr. Car Wash? What's your road for continued growth and development?
So I shared, we've reset our targets. You know, initially it was, can we get to 1,000 stores? And now that we're north of 500, that's a very tangible, real goal. We then had pushed that bar. And so resetting your set point in terms of what this thing could be, we're now looking at 1,500. But then the team came back and said, we're being wimps. We need to take this even higher. We think that 2,000 stores is within our grasp. In order to get there, it's all about people, Ted. And so for me, I spend a disproportionate amount of time, but it's actually where I should be spending my time, on the recruiting trail, looking for great talent that can help us take our business to the next level. Because this human capital piece, the investments that we're making in key talent across a lot of areas. So believe it or not, AI has come into our category. We're looking at different ways that we can identify vehicles in a more automated way. So year, make, and model, we obviously have license plate recognition technology where we can then serve up more relevant services to you, know who you are, when you come in, how often you come in, and make it a more customized, personalized experience than it is today. So moving from this transactional environment to more of this relationship that we have with one another, and then again, honoring you and your preferences and making sure that we're only serving the things that you want, is kind of the holy grail for us. And we're making big time investments in mechanization and automation and AI and IT specifically, and pouring every dollar of profit back into building the capabilities so that we can scale to 2,000 stores. So we're big time in investment mode as we reset our growth trajectory.
No plans to leave Tucson with the headquarters?
Listen, Tucson's our home. We love the grit. We love the entrepreneurial spirit. We love the fight of Tucsonans. And so we're a Tucson born and bred company, and we hope to be here for a very long time.
Well, John, thank you for taking the time with us today. Congratulations on your grandchild. We're going to enjoy the banana bread around here. Yeah. And everybody, please listen in tomorrow morning to Grant Kruger at 7 o'clock on The Morning Voice, 5 days a week, 5 different hosts. You've been listening to us on 1030 The Voice at Bustos Media. Trusted local news and talk. Have a great week, everyone.